John Cage 433. It's the Review A New Podcast. I'm your co-host, DJ.
And I'm Evan. What was that?
You know, it's part of the enjoyability of me just starting these things with references to things that he doesn't know is that he's supposed to come in with saying what his name is, but then there's also the surprise of, wait, what was that a reference to? Yeah.
What was the John Cage?
John Cage. It's the composer from, like, I don't know, like 40s or 50s, like, experimenting with minimalism, and one of his songs is a 4 minute and 33, like, composition where it's just supposed to be silence and just hearing, like, what's in the room.
Oh, yeah. Right. I think I've heard of that. I think I have actually heard of that. I just couldn't remember who that...
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, you know, all, you know, music students talk about and make fun of. God. It's one of those things, like, if it was ever actually performed, you know, you purposefully sneeze during it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm contributing, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, today we're here to talk about a true anomaly in modern film.
I was so shocked by this. I was, so, silent movie...
Mm-hmm. The next in our Mel Brooks wing of the Review A New Podcast here, where we're going through our favorite directors and looking through their movies. Last time we took a look at Young Frankenstein. I had a guest with me, Nella, who is really awesome, so go check out that episode. And today we're looking at Silent Movie, his follow-up right after that one.
Yeah, and it is actually a silent movie. It is, yep, just what it says on the tin. It is a silent movie made in the 1970s.
1976
in color.
In color. And you know, at first I saw a Roger Ebert review where he was like, oh, you know, he poo-pooed on the fact that it wasn't in black and white. And I could have swore I remembered watching this in black and white or something like that. But then I had that moment where I was like, well, maybe I just thought it was Young Frankenstein.
Because I think, you know, you could always play something in black and white.
That
you
is
know?
True, yeah.
So you may have seen it in black and white before. And it was, you know, it was in color. So if you're looking at it, if you're just looking at a few seconds of it, it looks like a normal movie from the 70s, but then the dialogue plates are this sort of sepia tone that clearly is supposed to look like an old, like, 1920s silent film. Mm-hmm. So that was a little jarring. I almost wish that either they had made it in black and white or sepia tone so it would really look like a 20s era silent movie, or if they were going to do the color, that they would have, like, had the plates in different colors and sort of rolled with it and, like, hey, if it's gonna look like a new updated silent film, let's do the plates in color too. Yeah.
You know what's interesting to me is, like, the more I learned, like, little stuff about like the creation of it, the more I kind of appreciated it. Like, okay, so on first there's that level of, like, all right, we already let you do a black and white picture, you don't get to do another one after, you know, like, we bet on that gamble, you don't get to do it twice.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's that. But I think also, like, there is that sort of, since this is an interesting sort of, like, meta parody, it ends up being, like, the movie ends up being about its own creation.
It is.
And so in that is the joke of, like, but it actually is taking place in 1976. So I did kind of, like, I kind of appreciated that juxtaposition in an odd way.
It's weird. It's, this one was another one that was really hard to find, like, 12 chairs. Like, this is not, you could buy a DVD of it, but you're not going to find it streaming on any of the big platforms.
No.
I didn't hate it, but you could, you know, it's not going to be your favorite Mel Brooks film unless you're a contrarian.
It really is as I was watching, I really was thinking, like, man, this really could, like, be like a G-rated parody movie, because it's like, you know, I mean, those movies back then weren't
A few sex jokes.
Yes. Well, and then they dropped the F-bomb a couple of times, and I was like, oh my God, like, that, like, almost took me out of the moment.
Are you saying fuck
F A?
Oh yeah, because they have fags, which actually we could talk about that joke.
Yeah.
But he, just, like, you remember our original premise for the show was the straight man and the white man, and it was like, he can say one thing and he can say another thing.
Yes.
So when we watch movies, depending on which slur needs to get said, so that the audience isn't confused.
Right. Right.
I for me, it felt almost like this should have been a short. Like, this, I mean,
Some I think they were saying that it evolved from a sort of like a sketch comedy idea.
Yeah, it felt like a sketch comedy thing, and I mean they managed to pull it off and make a full length movie.
Yeah.
But it really did feel like it could have been a maybe a 15 or 20 minute short, and they would have hit all the bases. But yeah, it is this meta thing where essentially Mel Brooks is playing himself and Dom DeLuise and Martin
And Marty Feldman.
Marty Feldman. I almost said Martin. Yeah, Marty Feldman are basically playing themselves. And
literally, like, they just changed their last names to something random. But their first names are exactly the
Mel,
same. It's Marty Mel.
Mel Fun, Dom Eggs, and Marty Bell, or is it Marty Egg and Dom? And the premise is that Mel is a washed-up drunk director who wants to save the studio he's working for from getting gobbled up by an evil corporation by making a silent movie. And at first the studio head says, no, 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 that will never work. And then he says, wait, but I'll put a lot of celebrities in it. And the studio film studio head says, okay, then. And he goes around and harangues celebrities until they agree to be in the film.
Okay, and so, like,
that's the plot.
Yeah,
that's the whole plot.
So whereas on one level there is that, like, level of just like, this is just going to be like, oh, we're just doing the tropes of a silent movie. But then you have that moment of like, wait, the movie's about making the movie, and then it's like kind of like sort of pulls you in with the silliness of it.
It really reminded me of the Muppet movie, actually.
On that level, like, of deconstructing things, but in a fun way.
It's the, you know, let's get the gang together and put on a show.
Yes.
So, essentially the main plot is Mel Fun trying to get celebrities to agree to be in a silent movie so that the studio won't get taken over by, what is it? It's like Engulf and Devour.
Yeah, Engulf and Devour. Apparently based on Gulf Western.
There's a B plot where the corporation decides to sabotage Mel by sending Bernadette Peters to make him fall in love with her, and I guess be so distracted by Bernadette Peters that he doesn't make the movie.
And I thought that was Madeline Kahn. I swore that was Madeline Kahn. My brain
They look similar, and I think the only reason I knew right off the bat it was Bernadette Peters was that I saw her name in the credits early on.
Yeah, but oh my god, she is gorgeous. Minnie Ferris corner right here.
Yeah.
She is absolutely gorgeous, like breathtaking. There's a time later on in the movie where she's wearing like basically a teddy, and I was like, oh, I didn't think we were gonna get this.
Yeah, Bernadette Peters looks amazing in it, and she not only looks amazing, but she looks a lot like Clara Bow, who was the big it girl of the 1920s of the silent film era. So yeah, like, look up the movie and look up Clara Bow, and
they give her some great costumes as well, like the bunny costume.
Yeah, yeah. She's sort of a burlesque dancer. Her acts all start with her saying, was it
Babaloo.
But because it's silent, like, you just see her kind of mouthing it, and then you see Babaloo.
And you hear the music. Dun, dun, dun. Like, there's a very, like, there's a motif.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously, like, 1920s era silent films, there is music and there are sound effects. There's just not audible dialogue because in the 20s, you know, you'd have silent movies, and originally you would have somebody, you know, playing live music, and then I think at some point they would also use, like, record players.
Mm-hmm, yes.
They'd use records where you could put sound effects because they didn't have to be, you know, perfectly synced up the way dialogue
would be. And what I thought it was is also kind of cool about it is, you know, when people say, like, there's a bit of art that is lost in the transition from, silent movies to talkies, and, like, part of that that's there is, like, the expressiveness of the face. You know, like, really getting to see the character because that's what they're relying on. And really, so it's, like, it really is about the actor. And I thought it was so cool. Like, there's one moment where you see Mel Brooks pitching the idea, like, it's a silent movie. And it's so, like, just shows his face just, like, you know, grinning
he's
and
got
mugging
this,
it up for
he's
the
He's got this insane grin.
You can see all of his teeth. And he's like, And it does the cut to the guy, like, anticipating the idea, and he looks really happy, and then it cuts back to him, a silent movie, and it cuts back to him, you see the, like, very clear switch, and, like, and then it cuts back to him, like Mel Brooks, with the face of, oh no, he's not buying it, is he? And you can so clearly
Yeah.
see
And
like the emotion on the face, and then the, oh God, I have to transition now.
yeah, and there are a couple funny gags where they play with that, where it'll look like somebody is saying one thing, and then when it cuts to the
Oh.
dialogue screen, it'll say like there's one where he's saying something.
Yeah, Dr. Louise says to Mel's character, like, but what if they don't like the idea? And then it cuts to Mel Brooks gesticulating very wildly in answering him, and then it cuts to, maybe you're right. Like,
Yeah,
I
exactly.
love
Yeah. Yeah,
that.
so that I think they had similar gags said a couple of times, but yeah, it's a weird movie. Like, it was enjoyable, but I will say I kind of lost the thread a little bit near I lost interest, to be honest, a little bit near the end, because it's a long time to go without dialogue, and maybe I'm
And
just
also
spoiled.
Mel Brooks in general, like, is hard at wrapping up movies.
And also, I will say, I didn't have an entirely unbiased viewing experience, because last night was Tu B'Shvat, which is a Jewish holiday where, like many Jewish holidays, you are required to drink several glasses of wine. So I was sleepy.
Three sheets to the wind, watching these movies the way they should be watched during quarantine.
But yeah, I mean, I would argue that it's slapstick, and then it's slapstick and celebrity cameos.
Yeah, and but the thing about it is, it's like, okay, so going to your point, the movie actually is a very interesting send up of like the Hollywood system in general, and that it's like, going into it, I thought it was just gonna be, yeah, just the slapstick and celebrity cameos, but like they actually, like, there's a bit of a biting commentary on the system at the time, especially in the sense that I've actually been listening to this podcast talking about movies of like the 40s and 50s, and they talk about best
Is it You
winning
Must
pictures.
Remember This?
I can't remember what it's called, Best Pick or something like that.
Okay.
But they talk about the movie that won that year and whether or not it deserved it and stuff like that. And they talk about how a lot of like 50s pictures, especially early on in like, the Academy of Arts and Sciences, it would be like if you had a movie with a lot of actors in it, that would be most likely to win because like a lot of the actors are in the voting, booths deciding stuff, and that's how you got anomalies like Crash in the ending up winning. That's what a lot of people say.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Just 'cause like, well, there was a lot of people in it that would really like to, you know what I mean? In a metatextual way, Young Frankenstein was a big hit for Mel Brooks, and so he was actually like in a very like specific way sending up the idea of, oh, if you get a big hit, studios will write you a blank check to do
So
whatever
it's
you
like,
want.
so I'm gonna make a fucking silent movie. Suck my
Exactly.
dick.
And so like
Oh,
it's a meta movie, and then
wow.
just the fact that the movie is about the making of the movie. So
Yeah.
it's like it's just oddly smarter than you think
It
it
is,
was gonna
yeah, and I
be.
mean, I can see that. I will say personally, this is a totally subjective opinion, but I have very limited tolerance for movies about Hollywood.
Yeah, no, I get you on that. I get you on that. And I was thinking about like so the way that the Muppets movies in the 70s worked, they are meta in that way that like there's that joke of like, oh, we are the Muppets are making a movie, but you can still enjoy it versus like what was that new Muppet remake with Jason
Ugh.
Sudeikis or something like that?
Jason Segel.
Yeah, where it's like, wouldn't it be great if I did a Muppet movie and brought the Muppets back? You know what I'm saying? Where it's just like, okay, the movie is just about how great the Muppets were, and we should do the thing again because they're great. But the movie is just about that instead of actually being a movie that is good on top of being about
Right.
bringing them back. Like, it's purely based on, don't
Right.
you love them?
Yeah, 'cause that older Muppets movie is just fun, and it's got, like, you come up on that church with Dr. Teeth and the Electric Man,
Yeah.
rocking the house down. Like, that's a great, fun scene, even if you, like, had never heard of the Muppets before.
Yeah, and a lot of people say it's encapsulated in the new Muppet character in the movie, who is just like, what is the importance of the character? Oh, the importance of this character is here is a Muppet who grew up with the show and loves it just like you do. And so isn't it so cool that you're in the show
Right.
now instead of like, we're giving you a production, it's the we're feeding your nostalgia and enjoyment of that thing back to you.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
like a good send-up can do that while also like really doing something fun like on top of it, and that's what I think this movie as, like, because it's Mel Brooks and he knows what he's doing, he knows how to make that work instead of it just being so self-referential that it's just going up its own ass, you know?
Right, yeah, and it doesn't, I mean, the movie does not feel up its own ass or anything. Like I said, it is enjoyable. The slapstick bits are just, you know, art. Like, yeah, they're great.
It really is, like, good with the timing and just how they subvert your expectations. There is a bit.
So I want to touch on the fags.
Yeah.
So there's a bit early on where they're about to go into the studio. Dom and Mel and Marty are about to go into the studio, and they sort of are like embracing each other in a, you know, courage.
They're so happy that they're about to
get this idea off the ground. And the hugging and everything just starts getting a little bit more intense and a little bit more intense until it looks from the outside like they're making out. And these two women walk by and go, "Fags!" And
it shows you the title card just of that word. Yeah.
And then later, there's a callback to it where they are in...
They meet up with James Caan.
They're with James Caan and his... So there's a whole big setup to this. So there's a... he's outside of his trailer, and they go into his trailer to talk, and the trailer's off balance. The spring
is busted.
Right. So they're just, like, tilting back and forth on the trailer and trying to eat... they're trying to share a meal.
Balls.
And so they have to, like, do everything in perfect sync. and of course, it's completely absurd. There's a point where Dom DeLuise is peppering his bagel, and he puts too much pepper on his bagel, and that causes it to tilt in his direction.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he sneezes, and they all go tumbling against the side of the trailer, and
the door flies open because of that.
Right, and so these two same women come by and see them all up in a tangle looking like they're having an orgy,
yes.
And they go, "Fags!" again, and so, you know, Mel Brooks movies have gay jokes in them, and
yeah.
What I will say is, you know, and obviously, I'm somewhat biased. I like Mel Brooks, so I want to just be like, you know, come on, whatever. And I will say that I think a lot of these, you do have to take them for the time they were made in. Because yeah. If somebody had a joke, if somebody put out a movie now, like literally now, where you just have like three straight guys and they fall on top of each other and, oh, it looks like they're gay... you know, come on.
It's so passe at this point.
But,
yeah.
You know, it's the 70s, and yes, the joke is, at the very least, leaning on homophobia.
It's gay panic joke,
but,
yeah.
But I do think it's worth noting that the targets of these jokes are not gay men ever. They're the target of the joke is straight guys who are mistaken to be gay, and then these women are not exactly shown in a flattering light, that they're yeah. like busybody,
and it's the same two women too. I did
right
like I see there's the aesthetics of the joke that I did enjoy, of like it's the same two women, and it's the fact that if you look at them, like, of course it's a silent movie, of course they're gonna play up the fact of the chaotic thing is happening, and if you happen to walk in, that would look kind of gay. Like, I enjoyed that aesthetic setup. I just hated the fact that they just said the word.
Well,
and so I'm just like, it just curses everything.
I don't know.
You know?
For me, like, them shouting that works better than if it was more subtle, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's like those two women are not shown in a flattering light.
True,
that they're
yeah.
just coming by being busybodies and looking like peering in people's windows, essentially.
Somehow they're all over the town
yeah.
where these guys happen to be.
Yeah. So there's a... There's a pretty long sequence where they are chasing down celebrities. They chase down Liza Minnelli in the canteen, and
well, they don't chase her technically,
well,
right?
Okay, they I think they see her and then decide
yeah,
to go.
They just take a really long time.
They're outside, so they're outside of the actors' canteen, the actors' cafeteria, and they see all these people going in like period costumes, including
yes.
Liza Minnelli, who's in this like beautiful velvet princess dress with a tiara. And I will say, as somebody who used to work in wardrobe a little bit, like I did a little bit of theater wardrobe for a while, and the sight of all those people going and eating in period costumes, I was like, no, don't eat in costume. Don't eat in costume.
Yeah.
But so Liza Minnelli goes in, and she's just trying to have her salad, and they all go in wearing
night
suits,
costumes.
Like suits of armor, like
yeah.
full suits of armor, and they're... and they're trying to pull it smooth, like, oh, let's just sit down. Yeah. Do you mind if we sit here? But of course,
going incognito, you know.
But because they're in these giant suits of armor, they're just knocking everything all over the place.
Yeah, and it's one of those jokes where it's like, it's the anti-joke of, like, we're pushing this as far as we can push it so that, like, it comes back around and becomes even funnier, the fact that it keeps going on. Because, like, all you're hearing is the shuffling of the metal. Yes. And they're falling all over each other. And, like, Liza Minnelli's trying to act like she's cool with the situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like, the funniest bit of that, like, is not them, but just her sitting there just trying to eat her salad and acting like nothing weird is happening.
Yeah. And, like, and actually, that's what I think is interesting about it. So, like, it's a movie, you know, on a meta level, it's the movie about them getting all of these actors for this movie. But the funny thing about it is, and what I at first thought was, like, jarring and weird, but then I thought, I was like, oh, is that the point? Like, the fact that they're doing all of these things, treating actors ways that you would not treat actors if you wanted to get them for something. Like, yeah. Right? Like, you wouldn't chase them around. You wouldn't do all of this sort of stuff. But then, at the end of them doing all of this awful stuff, they go, I'll take the part.
Right, yeah, like, you're supposed to, yeah, because initially they get Burt Reynolds by breaking into his house while he's taking a shower, and
the way it's revealed, it's like he's, like, washing himself up, and you're seeing it through, like,
and you see a
glass.
Hand, and at first, like, I just assumed, like, oh, he's got, like, a hot girl in there with him, and no, it's Marty.
Oh, my God, you see, and the first one, I think you see Marty's big bug eyes as he's feeling him up, and then you see the other two arms coming around, and it's like, oh, my Lord, and then the way Burt Reynolds, like, reacts to the camera, like, ah!
Yeah. Also, just brief note, speaking of jokes that don't necessarily age super well, there's an ongoing gag of Marty Feldman being a pervert and sort of harassing women.
Yeah.
But there is a really funny payoff that we'll get to.
Yeah, so that's the thing about it. Yeah.
But yeah, so there's a sequence of them harassing celebrities, and then the celebrities going, yeah, I want to be in your silent movie. And between each one, there's this gag with this poor newspaper booth guy
right.
trying to set up his booth, and the guys delivering the papers come and just chuck these big fat cubes of newspaper at him and knock him down.
Yeah,
and the headline is always immediately...
Exactly, it's in the reveal.
Burt Reynolds signs a silent picture, and yeah. So we're introduced to Bernadette Peters, and she goes right up to Mel Fun and says, "Are you Mel Fun? Come with me." And takes him off, and they...
Oh, wait, did she say, "Are you fun?" Or something like that.
She says, "Are you fun?" And yeah, so they get to use the name. And then they have a big falling in love sequence where they're frolicking around in the meadow in different outfits and fantasize being on a wedding cake.
Okay, now, you had said to me, and I was talking about this, I was like, you know, when I saw that wedding cake and how it, like, it turned out to be, like, a foam cake or something like that where they jumped into it, you know, it was supposed to be, like...
I think we had opposite reactions because we were like, oh, that doesn't look fun. And I was like, that looks fun.
Because I was thinking,
and then
like...
I said, have you never... He had never heard of foam parties. And I was like, that's such a weirdly specific thing, I feel like, from the early 2000s. Yeah, bro, MySpace.
Yeah, the Swedish house party. Yeah, it would be around that time, too.
I feel...
Euro parties.
I literally could not say for sure whether I have actually been to a foam party or not, because I have envisioned it so vividly that I think I may have never been to one, and yet I can, like, falsely remember.
Is it like a false memory in the sense of, like, we all remember going to, like, you know, summer camp because there was lots of movies about summer camp, like, that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was thinking, like, no, like, foam with a bunch of, like, soapy shit. Like, no, you'd slip on that shit. That's immediately the thing I was thinking. And it was like, and then, yeah, your wife brought up foam parties, and I was like, oh, yeah, that was a thing. And then I Googled it, and, like, the first thing I saw was people going blind, scratching their corneas, and, like, things going wrong, and chemical burns.
Yeah, it's not,
like,
a good idea. Yeah, there's a reason it was a short-lived trend. Yeah. It's not a good idea. But so, you know, so they fall in love, and of course she's, you know, being paid by the evil corporation to make him fall in love with her, but then she really falls in love with him, because how could you not look at that
of
face?
Course.
Look at that face. And...
But then, of course, it's the boys.
Yeah, you have a bit of a rom-com moment where his friends find out, they find the check, and so they, you know, as you would, they'd tell him, like, hey, you know, we found out she's being paid.
Yeah, she's two-timing you.
$50,000 to pretend to be in love with you. And he resumes his drinking problem in a very spectacular and slapsticky way.
Yes, he goes to pick up the bottle, and Marty tries to tell him to stop. But then, like...
He picks up Marty Feldman along with
Marty,
the bottle.
Yes. It's a great moment.
He ends up going on a huge bender and ending up with a bottle that is bigger than him.
Yes. And ends up, like, hanging out with a whole bunch of bums and just, like, it's honestly, like, a bit of a, like, a... you know, it's funny. As I was thinking about this movie and how silly it is kind of, like, again, like, kind of art comedy in a way. Because it's, like, it's artistic in, like, the meta-narrative of how this is constructed. And also, it's, like, artistic in, like, they'll have little moments where, like, you can see that this actually took, like, set up in time with how they coordinated with the music and the physical gags and the pratfalls of it. Like, so there's the time where he's, like, pouring out the alcohol to all the winos, and it looks like a bit of a dance, you know, that's happening. Yeah. Like, and then there's also a moment where, so there's lots of non sequiturs in this movie that they're just using to take advantage of, you know, the idea of, like, let's do a pratfall.
Yeah, like, there's an ongoing gag that just... where it's just funny storefronts, and it has nothing to do with the plot. It's like, oh, look, here's a tailor that all the new fashion is half the clothes are cut off, or here's the acupuncture and the guy comes out with needles in his back, and it's like, there's nothing to do with anything other than, hey, look at this, it's funny.
Yeah, and there's one in particular that I thought was hilarious where, Marty's character is being asked to, like, hold, like, one person's dog who... He's
oh,
like,
God, I forgot about the dog.
Yeah, like, oh, I need to go to the bathroom.
Two identical German shepherds, one of which is a guide dog.
Yes.
The other of which is not, and...
And, of course, the wrong person comes out.
Yeah.
And the way that they pay off with how, like, you actually hear, like, the percussion playing with the guy falling everywhere, like, it actually makes the impact of the moment that much funnier in the moment, because it's like, wow, you really, like, feel how he's bumping everywhere through the way the music's playing with it. Yeah. It was, like, kind of the moment, like, oh, my God, I actually, like, felt that moment, and it was made funnier by the fact of that percussion, like, in a way that if this was a movie with sound, it wouldn't have hit as hard. Because there's so much silence.
So he's on a bender, but then Dom and Marty overhear Bernadette. I can't remember her name. Her actual name is like Vava or
it's like Vinda.
I can't remember what the character's name was. It was some very silly, sexy lady name.
Yeah, femme fatale name, you know.
Yeah, but they overhear her on the phone saying, "I won't take the money. I love the little lug." And so they're like, oh, we were wrong about her. And the three of them go and find him and feed him about a swimming pool's worth of coffee.
Basically.
And he sobers up and they make the movie and it's opening night. But the evil corporation has stolen the one reel that they have. For some reason, they only have one reel of this film. And the evil corporation's stolen it, so they go to try and find it while Bernadette Peters distracts the audience by stripping and cutting up her nice gown for the premiere into a teddy.
I'd definitely be distracted.
And it's apparently going on for several hours.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, like, there was something about they come down through a chimney and get the...
Yeah,
the
bad guys are throwing the film into the fire, and then you see Marty's hands come down and pick it up.
Yeah, and they rescue the movie.
And then, don't they, like, there's a scene where the Coca-Cola bottles come into play.
I was in and out. There was a whole gag with the Coca-Cola vending machine.
Yeah, and they come back to it, that exact same place, like, three times, and show the Coca-Cola label very prominently.
Yeah, so hopefully...
And it's like, we needed to finish this movie with this product placement.
They're getting some money back. And they rescue the film, they show the audience, they say, I wonder if the audience likes it, and then as soon as it's over, the audience immediately bursts out with balloons and trapeze artists.
Yeah, and popcorn and throwing everything. It's like fans blowing.
And I think that's pretty much it. That's the end.
Yeah.
So it's, like I said, I was fading out a little bit.
Unprofessional, which drunk ass. No, I'm playing.
No, but it was very artful. There was a lot to be admired. I do feel like the fact that it was a feature film was mostly just impressive that Mel Brooks got away with making a feature film was a silent movie.
Yeah, it's like you do get the point that, like, at certain points there is, like, oh, we put this gag in here. We need to fill out time and tease out things. And it, you get one or two of those. Yeah. We're
so while I wouldn't necessarily choose to watch an hour and a half of silent slapstick, I feel like if it had been just a sketch, that certainly would not have had the impact of, oh, holy shit, he really did that. Mm. He really did that. He got away with that.
Yeah, I want to do another shout-out real quick. Marty Feldman was acting.
Really good.
It was so incredible.
Yeah. He's wearing this, like, little, what do you call it? Like a flight cap.
He wears,
cap.
Like, an aviator cap. Like, an aviator cap movie. The whole thing.
And then at one point, he's in a suit. And he's still wearing an aviator cap, but it's, like, a formal aviator cap. And it's black. And for some reason, it has holes for his ears. Yes. And those ears are sticking out. And it's so weird
looking. But it's so great. Because, like, he really is the best part of the movie. He is like the most cartoonish part of the movie, because like there's parts where like where he needs to get on the elevator and everyone's getting out of the elevator at the same time, and he's trying to get through, and he so looks like he's really being buffeted out
by the thing. Like, he really uses his body, because he's this very little skinny guy, and he really uses his size and his physicality and his looks to best advantage.
Yeah, and I wanted to shout out another part where a woman actually like lets him dance with him. And she goes into the crowd and doesn't think twice about looking for him, and then he goes like, oh no, I lost you, and you know, everyone's really packed in tight and everyone's dancing to the jazz music. He's trying to get in again, he's getting bumped around, and then finally he there's the thing that you expect to happen where it's like, oh, there's a long table there and you know, there's a long tablecloth on it. Oh, you know what he's going to do in order to get on the table. And so, like, he walks up to it, picks up the end of the tablecloth, and then where you think it's going to be the pull thing, he just, like, rolls it over and gets all over in people's face, and then pulls up the thing from under people's arms and then pulls it off. Like, I love that sort of like subtle subversion of like, he's like, you would think that this is what would happen, but it's just like that. Nope, I'm being really invasive here.
Yeah, the slapstick is very artful, and it's awkward when it's awkward in places where you would have expected it to be slick, and it's slick in places where you would have expected it to be awkward.
Yeah, and it's playing with you. Which makes it really, it's playing with you with that on purpose, and I do enjoy that it, like it's that self-aware, like, we know that you know that this is a silent movie, so of course you're gonna expect it to go here.
Right.
And then but we're gonna mess with you with that, because, you already expected that.
Yeah,
I think it's worth seeing with a friend. Right? Like, it's worth seeing with people and having that moment of, oh, that was ridiculous.
Like, we watched it together, and that's always a challenge. Like, we have to keep biting our tongue so that we save it for you guys. Yeah. For you.
Yeah, it's there for the pod.
But I would say watch it once, watch it with somebody. It's not going to be your favorite Mel Brooks movie. It's not going to be something you watch over and over again, but it's worth checking out because if nothing else, it's an impressive feat. It's impressive that he did this.
But... yeah, you don't need to see it. I can see you not having to see this one, because it can be a bit of a test. But thank you guys for joining us for this episode. This has been the Review A New Podcast.
Yeah,
you wanted to plug your...
So my friend has a new podcast out. There's one episode up as of this recording. My friend may sound exactly like me. Please disregard it. This is my friend Samuel Mouse. If you go to samuelmouse.com, you will find it's a fiction podcast. It is stories about a small southern town where weird things happen. So. SamuelMouse.com.
Thank you so much for listening. Hit the Patreon if you want to support the show and see every other episode that doesn't go out live. Or, you know, support us on Ko-fi, you know, if you just want to give one-time donations, you know what I'm saying? That's always appreciated. Hit all those links in the link tree if you want to see where everything is, and follow me on all the social medias. And until next time, I'm DJ.
I'm Evan.
And hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Get it? Sound of silence.
Oh my god, I feel so dumb. I was like, why are you singing? Why are you singing?
That didn't come out that year. What are you doing?
Simon and Garfunkel?